I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room.
Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed in the rent room. We let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bulacaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Red Room.
Aw, yeah. I'm in a good mood today. Good. I'm in a really good mood. What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest, and you guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room. We keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what? Say it with me, Linnell.
2016.
You see, James, we are better than 200, better than 100. Now, people always say, keep it 100, keep it 100.
We're super high.
We're super high.
And also like better that. Than 100. But I myself am super high right now.
Are you super
high? My God.
He had a whole bunch of coffee this morning.
I'm high on life and weed. No, that's not true. I want to see if I can get a little Diplo remix of that theme song.
Really? Oh, you know, that was bad, huh?
I feel like there's some twerk potential.
Oh
wow. He took it there. He took it there.
You know we're going to put it on video for you though, right?
I'm ready. Get them YouTube hits going.
Exactly. So, you know how we do it on the Rant Room. On the show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture. But our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft. You know what else, James?
What?
Shit like that.
That's how he just let me know that we swear here.
I told you. We didn't go in. I said the S-word. Ooh, you in trouble.
Right? No, they're like, we know you like to swear. We'd exactly. like to come by. And I said, that's all I need to know.
Okay. It's in the plug, bitch. It's in the plug. So you know how we're doing on the Red Room. You guys hear my girl. That's my new sis over there. My cousin.
You mean I'm not Lisa Bull College?
I'm about to get into that in a minute.
Whoa, okay. All right, I'll wait.
My girl, Linnell White, sitting in for us today. Lisa Bulacaja. Okay, how's she going to hurt her ankle on Saturday night, sci-fi night?
No, I think she probably heard it before then. It wasn't Snowpiercer that did her in.
I think it was. She got excited and fell off
you
a chair.
Can't, I mean, apocalypse is real. You can get excited about that. Sorry, Lisa. Hope you feel better.
Okay.
Come back soon.
That sounds disingenuous. Did you hear that? Sorry.
Well, I know.
Hope you feel better. Come back soon.
Here's the thing with me and Lisa.
They got a little thing.
We have a bit of,
go ahead, tell them.
We have a bit of a beef.
Uh-huh.
It's professional. It's fine. But Lisa attacked me on Twitter.
Attacked.
Mm-hmm.
Me on Twitter about a certain movie coming out in May in the Marvel Universe that involves two sides. Iron Man on one side. Captain America on another side.
Mm-hmm.
She's chosen the wrong side. And so is on.
Okay. She went for Ant-Man. You're like, no.
You know what? She went for Black Panther, which is fine, but he's not really a side. You know, he's kind of doing his own thing.
He's by himself. He's a cat.
He's rolling solo.
Yeah.
Why do you pick... Oh, okay.
So she had a coming, is what you're saying. Hmm? She misstepped, and then she had a coming.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. You get better soon. sign your cast, Black Panther.
That's hilarious. So you're going to fit right in, bitch. You're going to fit right
in. Good. I just want everyone listening to know that you guys have Starbursts in a bowl.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much all I need in life. Starbursts in a bowl. And the orange and yellow ones, too. No one's here for the red and pink.
Because I'm here for the pink.
Yeah,
I like
everyone
the
else
like
is.
The pink?
Yeah. I like the pink.
So just...
I like the vanilla
you hook
ones.
You hook
I mean,
up.
The lime ones. The lemon ones.
He's...
I was like, I'm thinking about Twix, pink hearts, yellow moons.
At a certain point, Lucky Charm in it. At a certain point, if you just hear me chewing and chawing, then you know what's happening.
That's not new on the show.
Okay. So check it out, y'all. Y'all know how we're doing in the Rant Room. So if you guys are grown, let's get it in. So you guys hear his voice? My man, my home team over here, Mr. James LaRosa, you guys, writer, director, producer, creator of the hit show, the hit series. I'm being too silly. The hit series hit the floor on VH1, y'all. What's up, James?
Not too much. All those writer, producer, director.
Oh, you do all those.
No, just hearing it.
I know, but it's you.
It's fine. Hearing it is exhausting.
But you do them now.
I do it all. I'm going to do mm-hmm. craft services soon. I'm going to see if I can start dressing the actresses myself.
Location scouting. Okay,
you know what? I'm looking out your window, and I'm like, that would be good for a dance number.
So okay,
I'm
would, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I know somebody.
Do you? Okay, good.
Exactly. That would be funny.
It's a pleasure to be here. I feel like you're both messes, but in a good way. So I'm ready to be a mess, too.
In a complete good way. Trust me.
She just looked at me like, I hope you break your
ankle.
She just
rolled her eyes at you, didn't
she? A mess.
A mess.
That's but a positive mess.
Okay, good. No, I'm good.
She is shanking me under the table.
Because I do have a bit of a beef with Lisa Bolakaja. Yeah, I'm a mess. But she started it.
No, she deserved it. We've already established that.
Yeah, I mean, she came at me. Yeah. All right, we'll move on.
So welcome to the show, James.
Thank you. We appreciate having you,
man. So today, I really want to get into, I want our audience to learn about your show, Hit the Floor. But first, I want to hear about your story, you know, how you got to this place, to where you're the creator of a kick-ass show with, let's just be real, mostly black characters. Right. They are mostly black characters on exams, pretty much. It's at least 50-50 or some shit. And you are... a white male.
Don't give away my secret.
Everybody know that, bitch. Everybody know.
It's true. I'm Italian, which is like pretty much white.
True. You know. Y'all black.
I mean,
y'all close.
Okay,
that kinky ass curly hair.
Oh wow. At least he has hair.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
I my hair not be 100% straight, but you know, along with everything else. But it's true.
Exactly.
My story. Oh God.
Tell us. Where you come from and how you got into the game. Let's go from there.
I'm from Boston. I grew up in a working class part of Boston called Hyde Park. Mm-hmm. And when I was growing up, I was one of those like good kids that was like, you know, mama's nice boy, did everything. Mm-hmm. But like kind of like down low, I was like... just doing everything,
really?
Like super sneaky. I used to watch soaps.
Dennis the Menace on the side or some shit.
No, well, so my brother was actually Dennis the Menace. Like, he would he'd be like stealing golf carts and driving up the street and whatever.
He's the distraction.
He was the shield.
Are consumed with him, so you get to do your own thing.
And I got all the A's, but I also cheated. It's going to start sounding like I'm bragging, but eventually you'll see I'm not. Sometimes I'd be the smartest kid in my class.
Okay.
And I'd go to these, you know, schools and, you know, other, whatever. And then eventually I went to a school called Boston Latin School, which got the smartest kids of all the classes in one school. And then I was no longer the smartest kid in the class.
And then the truth came out.
Right. And then I was like, wait, why am I mid to low? What? No. So, and then I also, so rather than just go, I'm going to push myself even harder and I just was like, where's the teacher keep the test the night before? Mm-hmm. Where to, like, so I just got, and I had every handwriting of all of the teachers and the guidance counselors and everything down. I'm saying this now because I can't take away my high school diploma.
Yeah, true.
But I hooked my ass off out of that school. I was never there. So at one point, this girl was like, James, I didn't know you even still went here. It had been like a year.
Wow. That's impressive.
Okay, he out at the mall chilling and stuff.
So this is what I would do. Instead of going and doing like real like stuff that any other kid would do, I would go home and I would watch soap operas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would go home.
Because this is before the days of DVR.
Mm-hmm.
Right, this was VCR Plus. Yeah. You had to learn all the codes, and it still didn't work for you.
So you couldn't just, kids out there, you couldn't just hit a button and record your show whenever you wanted.
Right.
It was a little
you
more
needed to leave school. Yeah.
You had to be there to push record.
Right.
Unless you knew how to record the VCR, like the timer.
Yeah. Oh,
I knew how to do that. I knew how to do that.
Please rewind in my story where I was saying I could figure nothing out at school. So I was figuring nothing out at home either. And so I would go home and I would watch soaps. And even on soaps, you would always find like these – I love like the little devious characters, mm-hmm. whether they were the devious bitches or the devious mm-hmm. like the guys who are just controlling the town. I ate that shit up.
So what was your soap? What was
daytime? Favorite? Well, my original was my mom when I was – I forget. It was like probably the early 80s. My mom would make popcorn and we'd watch – it started with Dukes of Hazzard, which isn't a soap, but that kept my brother interested.
Roscoe Pico train.
Right,
okay.
Exactly. Daisy Duke. Uh-huh. Then you're like, okay, I get it. And then it became Dallas, and then it became mm-hmm. Falcon Crest. So mm-hmm. those were mm-hmm. my first sort of
show. So the evening.
Show.
You started with the evening.
Starting with the evening where the bitches were the baddest.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Right. And I remember the first... I really felt like my life had been transformed when I was watching if I could stay up to Falcon Crest. And when I did, I knew I was like in for it. And there was one scene between Angela Channing, who was like the old lady who mm-hmm. ran the winery. Mm-hmm. That was –
every show had a gimmick.
Right,
it was oil. Yeah, it was – It was right, a winery.
If yeah, I yeah, pitched that today, yeah. it's no, a no, bunch no. of vineyards. It'd be like, no. get the fuck out of here.
No.
It's a white lady and she controls the grapes. Get the fuck out. But at the time, that was like the 80s, right? Yeah. They all had the collars popped and it was
well,
hot.
it was shocking to have a female, you know, in charge of something.
Right. And like, she was married to the president yeah. at one point, which mm-hmm. made her legit. But so it was her. And then it was like the real, like, the character that I liked and liked this type of character on the show, which is that sort of that scheming bitch who's always trying for the next thing. And that mm-hmm. was the Melissa character played by Anna Alicia. And, you know, Angela Channing had ruined her wedding. And so mm-hmm. Anna Alicia shows up with this wedding dress that she gave her for the event. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, in some bitchy move. And she says to the woman, you know, thanks for the wedding dress, you bitch. And it was the first time I'd ever heard the word bitch on television. Right. And it was like,
it was rare back then too. I mean, they yeah. probably had could do one a season maybe.
I don't know what but I remember if you've ever seen Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah, yes.
Where every time they would show like the drugs go in where it was like the eyes dilated yes. and the like the blood cells went mm-hmm. through and it was like the same, like that was me in that moment. Right. It was like bitch and I was like, oh, like it was like a hit. And I was like, my brain was rewired. Hilarious. So from that point on, I was like, there's a bitch in the scene and she's totally bitchy and there's yeah.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
So how did you feel about
thanks for coming, everybody.
So how did you feel about the reversal? Because I found an interesting thing where I liked JR,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? Which was the reversal sure. of that character
right.
to an extent, right? Yep. The evil, the rich.
The manipulative rich man. Yeah. Exactly. The patriarch. Yeah. yeah.
No, he was great. I mean, listen, having a guy who had all the power wasn't such a reversal. He wasn't, yeah. But I mean, but on Dallas, as much as I liked him enough. He wasn't my favorite character, mm-hmm. but I like loved Sue Ellen because she was just every season she was a drunk at the sanitarium and she's like, John Ross is mine. Like she was always, yeah. it was always the people who had to come up against him mm-hmm. who were the messes, or like Priscilla Presley was on that show and mm-hmm. she was, anyway, see, I use mess.
You know
as
what's
a positive
funny is
way.
We don't even remember who shot JR. Because there's like some, ended up being some minor character.
It was Kristen. It was Sue Ellen's sister.
Yeah.
They were having an affair.
Yeah, I don't remember. Yeah.
End of like the next season, floating in the pool. Yeah, no one remembers.
No one remembers.
I have a disease.
Except for you.
You was writing that shit down, wasn't you?
I mean, the world stopped that summer where it was like JR got shot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It was.
Well,
ridiculous.
And he had contract negotiations, so it was like, was he going to come back?
Know if he was coming
I would
back.
Not want to be the producer on that show. Yeah. I was like, how do you not have a deal with that man?
Mm, right.
Stupid.
No.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so every season, anyway, I won't go down there, but I will say that I every season at the end of Hit the Floor, you really never know what's going to happen to any of the characters. Mm-hmm. Probably for that reason. I'm afraid someone's going to pull a JR and be like, I want the price of the show okay. for my salary. But then just to go back to your question, which I'm never able to hold on to a subject and go back to it, so this is great. But my daytime soaps was CBS, so I loved okay. Guiding Light, As okay. the World Turns, and then but I knew because I was hooking so much, I knew it was on all the shows. Mm-hmm. So I knew even ABC and NBC mm-hmm. shows that I didn't really like. I kind of didn't give a shit about Days of Our Lives, but mm-hmm. I could tell you, okay, Marlena's levitating this week.
And you didn't mm-hmm. you didn't go for All My Children with Erica Kane? I mean, she was
I was just thinking about
running through people.
She was killing people.
Yeah,
back
you know,
then,
there was I think CBS was too hooked into me. Okay. I knew she was, you know, respect, mm-hmm. and yeah. obviously she was like the greatest.
She kept getting nominated
daytime,
year after year for the daytime Emmy, and
right.
it just almost became ridiculous that she was not winning. It was just mm-hmm. retarded.
Right. I mean, there was something about, I guess, just the CBS vibe.
The tone of it.
The tone of it.
It was shot differently. It had a different look to it. All the CBS shows had a different look than
right.
the ABC shows.
And I don't, yeah. I'm trying to think about like what tone or what sort of vibe they had that was slightly different. I mean, they were very family oriented, but at the same time, yeah, I don't know why. That's just my mother. Yeah. I was in the womb and my mother was watching CBS. I think I just heard like Reva Shane's voice like in mm-hmm. my embryonic fluid going, I need to watch that show.
And it happens.
And then it was 90210 and Melrose Place and Savannah and Homefront. And I just, any show where there was, I just love ensemble. I love shows with strong women who are scrappy. And everything I've ever written in my own career has been strong women
who
are scrappy.
You write women well.
I bet
people thought or think
women.
You're a woman who's writing your show. You know what I mean?
Maybe.
No, you know what I mean? In the right. sense of how well you write the women, and the women are always driving the driving force in the
Well, and
in
you
stories.
Know what's interesting is, so I should go by the name Jamie instead of James, so I really confuse people with my family name. But but what I learned in writing women is the guys have to be strong too, or else your women are are right. are kind of they come off actually as less more stupid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, because if the guys, if you purposely go, all right, the women are going to be super strong and the guys are going to be sort of the attachés or whatever, you go, okay, well, she can boss around anybody. And mm-hmm. why is she with this guy? He's nobody. So you really actually, one of the tricks to writing strong women is to give them really strong men.
You need someone to play against.
To play against, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, but that was something I had to learn, because in the beginning, I might as well have been like writing like, you know, Lisa Strada or whatever. It's like nothing mm-hmm. but women characters, and and the guys are just like, you know,
yeah,
hitchhiking through it.
Or like your Spring Break Shark Attack, which we'll talk about later.
Are you suggesting that the male-female dynamic? That
I'm just saying. The guys had six lines. That's all I'm saying.
that movie was awesome because I got to go to South Africa. The story,
was that where you shot it?
You couldn't tell the mountains in quote-unquote Miami.
I know it was supposed to be.
In the background.
Right. Yeah.
Everyone's like, really? That's
so they were really in the water in South Africa with real freaking great white sharks?
Okay. Let me tell you a story.
Here we go. Let's get here to it.
So they okay. So before we had even, I hope no one gets sued for this, particularly me. So allegedly, I'm gonna do what Kathy Griffin does. Yeah, allegedly speaking, this is allegedly what happened. I'm just saying, even though I was there and witnessed it. The premise of the whole thing, how it all came together.
Yeah, for the three people in the world who haven't seen the show,
which is shocking because that movie had over like 11 million viewers. Yeah. It was like crazy. The number one or number two movie of the year, and like mm-hmm. in you know obviously hit the floor. Is you know collectively is my biggest success, but mm-hmm. if my one bam of like a mm-hmm. bunch of like it was just you know big boobs and shark fins and 11 million people watched. But when I was working on a mini series with one of the producers, and I got along really well with him, and he was doing some of these disaster movies for CBS. They were doing his counter programming for Desperate Housewives, which was like killing it on Sundays. Mm-hmm. So he said, I have a new project I want you to do, and it's a disaster picture. And for me, that's bucket list.
He said it like picture. Did he?
This is like Frank von Zernick, who I absolutely adore. He's mm-hmm. done, if you look him up on IMDb, he probably has more credits than anyone else on the planet. Wow, it's just movie after movie after movie after mm-hmm. movie, these TV movies. And he was doing like Category 5 and on all these other mm-hmm. type of projects. And yeah. he was like, I want you to write a disaster picture for me. And I was like, ooh, I was all excited because I was like, you know, Earthquake and Towering Inferno. Mm-hmm. Like the idea mm-hmm. of, which is almost what I do on the show. It's just get a cast together and just like slowly kill them off one by one. and I love it, right? So I was like, this is great. So I go into his office and I'm walking by the edit bays where they're doing I think it was Category 5 where, you know, a tornado had gone through Vegas and there's mm-hmm. like brides being snatched, you know, out of like high rises through the windows and sucked up into the air and the mm-hmm. and the effects were so great. And I go in there and I'm like, I can't wait to find out what this is going to be. And he goes, what's my disaster going to be? He goes, okay. And he's like, ready? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, the disaster? Sharks. And I thought, it's not really a disaster on Spring Break. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, fuck. But I will say...
That's high concept, though.
It's yeah. well, but that's how they were rolling them out mm-hmm. at the time. They're like, "We need it's back."
And let's
it's
this, let's set it's the year. I mean, what was this? 2004.
This was we filmed this at the very beginning of 2005. Yeah, okay. And it aired in 2005. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And it was. I mean, we went to South Africa to do it, which was amazing and mm-hmm. life changing for a whole bunch of different reasons. And it was just a fun.
You broke your virginity.
It was yeah, right. 2005. I'm gonna put that on my IMDb.
He's 23.
Lost his virginity at Spring Break Shark Attack. But anyway, yeah. So the yes, it was actually South Africa. Yes, in the news before we got there was some old woman who, you know, went for her morning swim every morning in her little cap. Mm. And then one morning, all they could find was the little cap. Yeah. And so we shot at one point. We're shooting open water, and they're like, "Oh, they'll be fine. They'll be fine. We have like, like deterrence and whatever deterrence." You can't see me in the room. I'm doing air quotes.
Shark.
Some of the little electric current.
I've seen all the Jaws movies.
They do those. Shark pods are actually real. We did this sort of like crazy, you know, mutant version of them. But like these little devices that are like kind of can keep sharks away to a degree.
Sonar.
I was not the safety person on that movie. All I saw, I was sitting in a boat watching them all jump in, and I was like,
fingers crossed,
better you than me, because yeah. I'm just like.
No, you couldn't pay me.
Those are some bold actors, though. You got to tip your cap to them.
I would say they were bold actors. I would also say that I'm sure they took all the necessary precautions. And you know, I mean, information, who knows who had what. But it was a crazy day. I'm sure they were fine, allegedly. I stayed in the boat as we scattered like red dye in the water. Anyway, but that was fun. We don't throw our actors into open water and shark infested.
No, never.
No, that doesn't happen.
Never.
So we put them at risk in so many other ways, but not that.
So let's go back. So you were starting to tell us about high school and, you know, playing hooky.
Yeah. So but I was really super into TV, and then I went to Syracuse University, the Newhouse School, where I never was going to be a TV writer. My mom used to come up with story after story, and she was so quick. And I actually, to me, was a deterrent. I was like, I'll never be a writer because I can never do it as fast as she does. Mm-hmm. And so I was actually a PR major for a couple of years. And then I stayed one summer, and I worked in the internship office. And one of my jobs was checking in on interns, you know, in their different – wherever they were. And one of them was entertainment interns. So I would call people – you know, who had internships at different places in LA, and I'd say, how's it going for you? Blah, 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 like whatever. Mm-hmm. And people who I knew were like, couldn't run around without like stabbing themselves, like just accidentally for like, they're in like LA going, I'm having the best time. I'm like doing dry cleaning for like Leah Thompson. It's the best. And I was like, if they can go to LA and do it. So I immediately changed my major to writing, got a degree in it, and then drove out here across country. Afterwards, didn't know anybody.
Wow. Yeah.
And then got into a writer's group. And there was somebody who had worked at a company called Big Ticket Television, which was Mr. Spelling's company. Mm-hmm. And there was an open job for a writing assistant for this woman who I adore, named Margaret Oberman. And she had written for Saturday Night Live. She was Eddie Murphy's writer, and she had just gotten a deal there. And our whole meeting was just laughter. And then afterwards she called me and she said, I forgot to ask you, can you do assistant things? And I was like,
that is her best.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. And she's still around in my life. I love her.
Awesome.
And she's still around in general too. But anyway.
Now she wants 10%.
Yeah, but she gave you a break. You know?
Yeah. I mean, she did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We need those people.
Especially when you don't have, at the time, I didn't have a printer. You know what I mean? So it was like I got the office where I could like stay late and write out my little scripts and, you know, try and break in. But I literally knew absolutely no one. And so Margaret does these courses that she teaches sometimes at UCLA where she has her famous friends come in. And I'm sitting between like, you know, Catherine O'Hara and like someone who won like 18 Emmys with, you know, SCTV or whatever. And they're all saying like how they began. And they're like, well, you know, my cousin Dan Aykroyd and I.
Right.
As I did. And I'm just like, I
don't know anybody.
I didn't know anybody and actually struggled for years and years in this town. You'll hear struggle in this podcast.
It's a hard town to make friends, I think. When you just come from, like, you drove from New York, and you're an East Coast kind of guy, it's hard to just sort of get out here and then have like a network of friends.
Yeah, fortunately I found a job and the people that worked there were very cool, and some of them were in similar situations. They were like assistants to other writers or whatever. But it really, you know, LA is the kind of place where people come and go. So there are people who really, really, really want to be writers and actors and directors or whatever. But it's like some people are just like, I give it a year. And I'm like, I'll give you a plane ticket because you're not going to get it done in a year. And you're going to have to just hang on forever. So and also I think LA inspires people to kind of be bigger dicks necessarily than they would normally be.
Wow.
Totally and unnecessary.
So those are the people that you're like, oh, okay. Like you're going to tell me about that really hot party you went to and that really hot member of Saved by the Bell that you had sex with last night. And all this.
Which one was it? No, I'm like,
it was Dustin Diamond. Yeah, that was
he's supposed to be well endowed.
I mean, I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
I couldn't tell you either.
I'm not sure who actually would tell you. Imagine some shame society out there. The Dustin Diamond shame society. Great. Now I'm going to have a Twitter war with Dustin Diamond.
No, oh, I'm sure he won't.
He has more people to pick on. He has half his cast who doesn't want to work with him ever again.
I'm curious now. Like, where is
I know he was trying to do some more legitimate stuff, but I don't know.
I hate to say I think and not really know, but I feel like he had to go to jail for something.
That sounds... Oh, wow. I know he was on some rehab show or something.
Was he on Celebrity Rehab?
He was on one of those type of shows. There was some show.
I don't know. I actually kind of do know, but I'm going to take this opportunity to Starburst because I'm afraid about what I'm going to say next. So I'm going to chew into this microphone. That is so nasty. Sorry.
So you started working with Margaret. How long were you with her?
I really am going to chew and talk at the same time. I was with Margaret for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then I left basically in those 2 years. Now you want the how.
Tell it.
You want the like, how do you break in? How do you chew a Starburst? Starburst. How do you chew a Starburst? Let me swallow this damn thing.
Okay, look, Starburst, we need some sponsorship because my man is just selling you big time, okay?
For free.
Okay, right. Look.
Or at least sponsor Hit the Floor.
Okay, look.
Buy some ad space on Hit the Floor.
Thank you, good. That was some good delaying tactics. I'm good now. I have an entire unchewed Starburst in my gut.
Starburst. Isn't that a bitch?
So, but in that 2 years, I was doing nothing but sending out query letters to agents going
while you were working there.
Oh yeah, I was like, so I was like, you know, I would go in studio system, I would see who rep the writers that I liked and I watched, and I'd say, you rep blank, I like their writing, I like their style, I'd love to send you a script XYZ. I don't even know if you do that anymore. I don't know if you send query letters to agents.
There's a few people I know who still do. It doesn't work.
Now they don't respond at all to query letters.
Well, but unless you get it. You know, remember in what was it, Better Off Dead? Was it Better Off Dead or One Crazy Summer with the kid who was like, I want my $2? Like, who would follow them? Like, he like got was supposed to get paid for the newspaper and didn't or something. I was like that kid. I was like, hi, I sent you a query letter 2 weeks ago. I called them up like every 2 weeks. But I never bothered them necessarily. The assistant would always say, oh, hey, yeah, no, they just said they haven't had a chance to read yet, but if you want to call back in a couple of weeks, it's like, whoop, you told me to call back in a couple weeks. That's my... So,
you gotta have that tenacity.
Persistence. You have to be persistent. But so I would have all these like letters, and I would write the dates on them going, I called them at this time, this is what they said. Okay. I called them at this time, this is what they said. And I save some of them because some of them are like just like covered
really?
In dates and
from
times
the times you
and
called
what
them?
They said. Then one of them, like a couple of them actually go on for over a year. Mm. Like rather than say, I mean, because agents have to read a lot of stuff.
We're just not
going to
read it.
Most of us give up on once or twice.
Yeah.
So, and I say, because some of them are agents that still work. And they call me and say, hi, would you like to read my client? And I was like, you don't remember me, but I don't do that. I was calling
you for over a year.
Yeah, I would never, you know, there's all sorts of reasons why that happens. But
sure.
But actually, how I got signed by an agent's assistant who he became an agent. And then I was his first sign, and that was at UTA.
Was that because you were doing this process, or somebody you met?
Yeah, you know, I sent a query letter to his boss, I'm pretty sure, and then he got because the assistants always intercept, right? And they all the agents' assistants want to be
agents. Find
right, so they're cultivating a lot of the relationship. Mm-hmm. Again, this is in the 90s, so I don't even know. Now it's like you have to enter some crazy fucking writing competition, and then that's
how you write.
You have to be on the blacklist or whatever it's called, nothing.
And what were you writing at the time?
My specs were NYPD Blue was kind of my number one spec, and because that was what you did. You didn't
do
the
original
at the
time. Women on there.
And it was all, of course, I focused on the women. And then I did, I remember I had like an ER, which focused on the women. I had a Party of Five. I mean, those were, at the time, all you did was specs of shows that existed. But my NYPD Blue one was the one that got me the agent. It was the one that actually got me my first job, which was for John August.
Love John
August.
Been trying to get John on the damn show for 2 years.
He's a good dude.
like he's busy or something. You know?
Right. His family and his like writing and everything.
And creating apps like left and right.
He's been on the forefront and was doing kind of the advice to writers and that whole thing before anyone was doing it. Like, why would you give a shit giving advice to someone else? Right. But No, he's a great guy. This was 99. I want to say 99 or 2000 so he gave me my first writing job, which I have to say I do take a little bit of pride, and you want your first kind of writing job to be from somebody legit and cool. Yes. And I love the fact that I can say that was that. And he's been great to me ever since. But it was him and Dick Wolf, and it was a show called DC, which...
Oh, right. I remember that.
Was it The DC? Or was it DC?
No, it was called DC, and it was a mid-season show for the WB, which dates me. And it was both... it had a lot of cachet to it as far as everyone involved, but it was also just...
Because wasn't Sydney Poitier's daughter on the show, cast on the show, or...
I don't think so.
Okay.
I feel like she wouldn't have hidden that detail if that was her. No, it was Mark Paul Gosselaar, Jacinda Barrett, Daniel Sinjata, And then Christina Loken. It was a good, pretty cast. It was basically supposed to be like Felicity after college. Now they're like, you know, interns in DC, and it had a good pedigree, all this kind of stuff. But it was just, it was writing wise, the education came from the business part of it. It was just kind of, to say nicely, I think there were people with conflicting ideas at the very top, and it trickled down. And so it just became really an exercise in almost what not to do sometimes. And everyone was stuck in these positions that it was almost like powerless. It was like, okay, well, there's all these different notes from all these different people. People are getting involved in ways they didn't have to. It suddenly became like kind of like this fire that was, you know, you had to put out. And by this point, John was gone. It was just, you know, one day I came into the office and it was like, this is your new boss. And I was like,
John August speaks openly about how traumatic that experience was.
Oh, he does?
On his show.
He talks about it on his podcast.
Oh, does he? Tell me what he says so I can get, because let me tell you, I am keeping it clamped because I'm like, let John tell his story.
He says he had a nervous breakdown because of the show.
I feel really bad for him for that because that he would have a negative experience because he's a very, very creative guy.
He's the nicest dude I've ever
And he's the nicest dude and he's never been anything but nice. But for me, I think the combination, and I'll go on record as saying this, maybe he already did. And if John, you beat me to it, then God damn it. I just think that having somebody who, like John, who is very, creative and very character. He thinks about character. And the show was at heart a serialized show. And then you have a guy who's like Dick Wolf, who's essentially a 800-pound gorilla. Oh, he's an alpha. All of his shows are very hard-boiled and, you know, more procedural. Sure. It just wasn't a good mix.
And the procedural doesn't necessarily work on the WB.
Although once John was gone, they tried to make it that way. I remember pitching. This was the best story I have from that was. Okay, so they come in and they go, okay, so here's your new boss, and we're like, what? Okay, but the writers didn't get replaced, which I was like, okay, that's interesting.
That's unusual.
I still have a job. That's great. And so we were like, well, who are we pitching to? Because we didn't really have someone specifically to pitch to, and like, oh, you'll be pitching to Dick Wolf, who was never around. I'd never seen him once on the entire show. We're months into it, and we're all going to pitch him stuff. Now, there are people on the show who there's different types of people. I think
was there a room, or were you guys?
We were all brought to him.
Okay.
And so it was the writers. And by the way, the writers room was like all babies. Like the highest ranking writer was a story editor or executive story editor. And then there was a bunch of us who were staff writers.
Okay.
Because John hired the people that he liked their writing the most and what have you. So there were people who were ready to like, I'm going to dive into the fire and I'm going to get first in front of Dick Wolf and I'm going to give you what my story is going to be. And it's going to be – and I'm like, I've never met this man. This is what I do. I sit back and I watch all of you like crash and burn and get stabbed and die. I listen to what the man's reactions are and what his notes are and then I step in because, you know, I wouldn't say – that might be the no guts, no glory approach, but it's all – or, you know, no guts approach. But everyone was getting slammed. They were like, it's a story about this and here's what I would pitch. And he's like, no. No. Next. La, 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 la. Yeah. What else do you have? Everyone was just crashing and burning. And I'm paying attention to what this guy is saying. And this guy is not there for any character at all. Like, it's just like shocking moment. And I had this really lovely euthanasia storyline with two of the characters and the grandmother is ill. And one of the characters wants her to be, you know, honor her wishes of being like, you know, put down. That's not what you say about an adult, but as opposed to a dog, and like the conflict or whatever. And I could just see where it was all going and what was working. And so I was like, so there's a gun. And he's like, By the time I was done, I think I was the only person that actually got their story through him. And I was like, praise. But anyway, that's not how you run.
So you kind of like in the moment reworked your pitch.
Right.
As any writer would and should. If you see someone going, I hate what you just said to me, then you go, okay, so
mentally rework.
Yes. Right. Yeah. And after you give every pitch you go chung chung and then he's like, I don't know why, but I love it. But you know, I think they only aired a few episodes. I'm sure there were unaired episodes. And it was really though to me, it was
You can still find it though. The show.
Can you?
I don't know. I'm asking.
I have no idea. I haven't seen an episode of DC, period. That's the end of my sentence.
I guess we haven't seen any green checks on that. No, I haven't.
Where's that green envelope hasn't showed up. But, you know, it's every experience is a learning experience, even if it is tragic and traumatic. But I really, you know, learned – certain things from doing that show that I really do believe have informed how I do mine. And it's kind of like the things that you don't want to do. I mean, some of it was like, here's the things to avoid. Like, you really, at the end of the day, you really want harmony at the top. Sure. You really want, and not just between people, but the person itself who's running the show, you want them to be supported. You want them to be, everyone is going to have a vision. I don't think mm-hmm. you can really find yourself in that position unless you have some kind of a vision. Mm-hmm. So you mm-hmm. have to get behind it. Mm-hmm. And if you have an issue with what that is, rethink it before you even start, because otherwise mm-hmm. it's just going to be a trail of
right.
heinousness. So, mm-hmm. And I think it also, there was a lot of stuff about that show where a lot of us were kept in the dark, like mm-hmm. showing up one day going, here's your new boss, and I'm knowing what the hell's going on. Mm-hmm. So I'm very transparent with my cast and my crew, and I think it really helps people feel part of the process. I think it makes people feel respected and heard and give their best stuff.
Well, you have so I was telling James off air, off mic, whatever you want to call it, earlier before we started, that we
how
did
sexy
a,
I was
there was a little bit of that
uh-huh right.
And then I opened the door and I walked in.
And you were back
and
in the middle of it all.
Sorry.
I mean,
next
now
time,
we got to start
time,
all over
next
again.
Next time I'll knock. Next time I'll knock. That was my fault. I didn't know.
It's that kind of podcast.
I was telling him about, we had a, I was part of the committee that brought in the Hit the Floor panel, and we also screened season three, uh-huh. the premiere of season three, the new episode. And I was telling James off mic about how, I was so intrigued with the, and I've seen at least 20 of the episodes, and I've been tripping off on, for some reason, that episode clicked in for me. It was something, sometimes you watch something with an audience and it just, the laughs or whatever, just everything starts coming in.
It's
I was
a communal
like,
viewing experience. It's
wow.
Elevated
like,
about it.
And people who know me know I write that freaking murder, death, kill stuff. And I was like, I would love to write on this show. It was something mm-hmm. about that room that night, right? Of course, we had some hecklers, but whatever.
They were the
didn't
best.
Didn't we? We had some weird hecklers. People were like heckling.
Really?
Yeah, it was weird.
And we had a couple.
Like, why would you come to the guild to heckle?
Membership
card revoked.
Yes. What we learned after the fact was that there was two people that said something. One apparently comes to all these events mm-hmm. and says the same thing. And then, so he's never coming back. Okay. But I was like, okay, great that we could be the one to shut it down. I love the way Taylor handled him. She was like, okay, well, that was weird. And then she just moves on. And then the other one, as soon as the woman said what she said something, I forget what she said, but then immediately she regretted it. But
yeah.
Anyway.
But you did really well. He was like, okay, anyway.
Yeah.
Do we have ghosts in here or something? But so where we're going with that was, you were starting to talk about how on your show, on Hit the Floor, you are not afraid to involve the cast and crew and things. Here's an interesting thing they do. When you guys are off, mm-hmm. they are like emailing and tweeting each other, and they have like a what do you call it? A text that goes to like 100-something people.
It's a mass text.
Yeah.
There's different kind. There's the dancers have their own group text. Okay. The cast has a text. The dancers and the cast have a text. Everyone is umbilically that's not the right word umbilically connected. Uh-huh. It's a very tight knit group.
I love
sure.
that.
That's
I have cool. never heard that before.
That bums me out because that's all I know. And so mm-hmm. I've had
who started it? How did it happen? Do you know?
It just
organically grew from people liking each other.
I think we all really, really, really loved working on the pilot. Mm-hmm. When casting was very difficult in terms of really wanting to find people who could be the right person for the right thing. But also, I as much as I love drama on TV, I don't love drama in my personal life. Mm-hmm. I love drama in your personal life. So if you're having some trouble, bring me some Haagen-Dazs and a spoon. I'm about it.
I heard that.
But I'm very... what's the word? I'm in tune to people's emotions, and if people are and if people are having a bad day or being mm-hmm. bullied or whatever, I can feel it and I hate it. Mm-hmm. And so whenever I would cast, I would not only go, okay, who's the best for the job? Who could do the dance? Who can do the bawling? Whatever. But I would also kind of catch their vibe. Mm-hmm. I'm like, who do I want to be around all day? Whatever. And every single person I cast, I was like, they're just really cool, and I like their energy. And just as a byproduct, the people who I liked all their energy, liked each other's energy, maybe for the same reason, which is like, you know when you find someone cool in LA, you just kind of have to hang on to them because they're not all there. Like, it's not, not every corner is not like, hey, it's another fun person.
Yeah, definitely.
So, and then that just sort of kind of grew. I also think that because I never went through the traditional room route, like I was a staff writer on DC and then I couldn't get a staff job to save my life. And eventually I was just writing my own pilots.
So how many years did you go before from the staff writer to the time you got your show?
Staff writer was in maybe 2000, 1999 or 2000 probably. Maybe. Anyway. And then, I mean, and Hit the Floor was 2000, and I think I sold Hit the Floor in 2010, maybe. So for 10, and in that...
But you were doing the movies for VH1 and MTV and stuff.
Yeah, because I'm my father's son, and I always have to be working, and I was never like, I'll just wait for my opportunity. Mm-hmm. Like, I got into writing TV movies, I got to write into pilots, I was at MTV, VH1, CBS. Like, I was always fortunate enough to never have to do anything else but write. But it was one of those deals where it's like, okay, just made my health insurance this year. And then, you know, but I wasn't, and I always wanted a mentor. I always wanted, like, I just want to hook up with, like, you know, Mark Cherry. I want him to be my whatever, or David E. Kelly, or whoever these people are. And I was just like, nobody hired me.
David lives in Northern California.
So I was like, you know what? I knew that any show that I was going to write.
Actually, he's here on the lot, by the way.
Who is?
He's here on the lot.
David
Kelly.
Is he?
Yeah.
Wow.
Interesting. Good to know.
I only know because my mentor just interviewed for his new show.
That's great.
To be an EP on the show.
This is a Sunday, so I know his ass is at home. Michelle Pfeiffer. I know he's not here. but I just knew that any show that I wanted to, and there were definitely shows along the way that I would have loved to have written on. Mm-hmm. Like,
were you trying to get staffed? Was your agent sending you out?
I had some really fucked up agent scenarios.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So,
and he's been signed with the biggest agencies too.
I've had a couple of really, you know, large agencies that when you sign with a large agency, it's a honeymoon. Mm-hmm. They love you. Mm-hmm. And then you get the job right away for something. And then something happens and you didn't get hired that year for whatever reason. It starts to cool.
You're always
number two. I was at an agency, a very large agency. Mm-hmm. Perhaps the biggest anyway.
Okay.
But there was an agency that I was at. I left UTA to go to this other agency and everything was great until it wasn't. And they never actually told me they no longer represented me.
How does that exist?
How does that make sense? I had a manager at the time that I had stopped working with. He was like beginning to direct. He was doing all this stuff. And it just makes sense that like you're a director. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, this is so weird. Anyway, great guy. I'm still friends with. It's all great. My agent at this particular agency was like, yeah, I don't think we have the support that we need behind him. And so, you know, can you tell him that we're not going to represent him anymore? And he's like, I don't work for him anymore. You tell him. That was the last conversation.
Cowardly.
Right. That was the last conversation they had, right?
Passive aggressive.
And that particular agent, that was enough for him. Like, he thought, oh, well, he'll tell him. So and this is one of the biggest agencies in the world. Mm-hmm. Perhaps the biggest.
It's just not professional.
And but that stuff happens, especially when you're cold and, you know, people don't give a shit. Now, the irony is, this was the same year that I did Spring Break Shark Attack, and I did two other movies.
Right. Which was huge.
It was in TV movie. It wasn't in series. And the series person, I guess, wasn't getting a cut of it or whatever it was.
Whatever,
and,
but an agency doesn't want money?
But that's something to sell you on, though, isn't it?
You know what? The sad thing is I've never actually had the conversation with the agent and the agent, I don't know, that was so in it alone. Because at one point, they're sort of boss or whatever, I had a meeting with them and they were like, you know, we really want to get the people, you know, get excited about you again, whatever. And I was like, great. And then 3 weeks later, I sold a show to ABC Family. Mm-hmm. And I was like, how'd that work? Hello? No one was calling me back. So even that was kind of a bullshit. Yes. Like, we want to get them excited about you. Great. I sold the pilot. Mm-hmm. No, not even a call back. Wow. Bad taste.
Yeah.
Bad taste.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So
that's a case where it's not you, it's them.
Mm-hmm. It's, in that case,
because you're doing everything
behavior.
A client is supposed to do.
Yeah, and you know what? I think I do really think that there's ways to do business where if you are, for whatever reason, you know, either you're cold or, you know, your agent's only have certain connections and they've already gone to those connections for you, so there's really nothing for them to do. Or even if, like, you slept with one of their husband, I feel like there's still...
What did you do, Jane?
Right, exactly. I wish I broke a home before I left that place.
I got the videotape on you.
I wish I wrecked that a family before I left.
Now I see why your phone calls not
No matter what happens, I think there's certainly a phone call to be made to say, hey, this is what's going on. And it was so bizarre.
I don't even know
if this person even A, considers that as a foul, and B, I can't even imagine what his opinion is of me going into season 3 of a show with millions of viewers.
They know.
Certainly when I deal with this agency, it's never this agent.
Oh, really? But, so you never get their scripts coming in from that person.
I'm sure I get their scripts. But that's what agencies do too. Mm-hmm. Is they always go, well, we're pretty sure he won't deal with this person, so let's have this other agent cover them and do whatever.
I see.
So you know, it's fine. To me, it's juicy, and it was really such a bummer at the time. Mm-hmm. But it's nothing that I, to this day, go, oh, you know, I'll never work with that agency's mm-hmm. client. I mean, that's petty and dumb. And, you know, I definitely don't respect the person who did it and kind of a couple of the people that are around them. But
It was a problem with a specific – it was a specific individual, not the entire
I think it was a specific
company.
Individual who maybe their boss thinks that they talked to me about it and said. But, I mean, it was a bunch of unreturned calls. It was just – it was that sad situation where it's like, you know –
we've all had it.
Your balls are in your glove compartment because you're like, well, that – I used to be a writer.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a good example, and if you have like a sound effect that's like James's advice.
we'll put it in.
But get with an agent that gets you, you know, because I don't know that that.
But what does that mean?
I don't know that that agent actually really ever got me. I think he saw me as a sexy sell just because I was very, you know, I was younger and I had people behind me and I had credits and all that stuff. So I think he thought, and I was his first client as well.
I
popped more agent chairs. At Los Angeles.
Because I was going to ask you, I didn't mean to interrupt you in that thought, but I was going to ask you, like, how, because you went from a huge agency to another huge agency to another, while you were still staff. How were you able to manage those big agencies on that level?
I obviously didn't. you know, I started off at UTA, and then I ended up going to this other agency. Mm-hmm. And like I said, when you're hot, you're hot. And, you know, when you don't get staff right away for whatever reason. And, you know, it's not that I didn't have meetings. There were meetings that I had. But it always seemed to come down to – and this is sort of funny. When people – like some of the opportunities, it came down to me and one other person. And the one other person may have been the diversity hire. Because when you're a staff writer
– sure.
Especially when I was – you know, when I was a staff writer, it was like early 2000s, mid-2000s. The producers are all white. So they're not giving up their job. So whenever they're like, we need, you know, an African-American or a Latino or, you know, whatever it was always like, well, let's do the staff writer. And so it's the irony of having a show that is like has a kind of a great track record with sort of diversity. I was like, well, that shit kept me out of work for a little while. But to complain about it is like, fuck you, right? Because it's kind of like, enjoy. Yeah. Enjoy the struggle that everyone else has to go through. It's so – I mean, you just plug away. I mean, I think the relationships that I had outside of the agencies were the most important because, as they say, they don't necessarily get you the jobs. They, like, do the deals.
Sure.
And so the show had nothing to do with my agent at all at the time. And now I'm at a very small, very humble agency. Okay. I mean, I say small and humble just compared to UTA and all the other major ones. But when I say sign with an agent who gets you – my agent is somebody who is a very cool guy. He understands my writing in a way that my prior agents didn't.
That's important. Number one, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like...
but it's hard to find that person.
Yeah.
I mean...
Oh, well, it is hard to find because this guy wasn't my first agent. Like, I had to go through... And also, there's the razzle-dazzle of being at a giant place. Like, if you go, I'm with CAA or wherever your agency happens to be, you can be like...
I used to be one of the big ones. I
And then so you felt like you could walk into a room and, like, swing a big dick and be like, I'm with this giant agency. And then that giant agency has a bunch of other people at that giant agency. You're
swimming in a large... ocean,
right?
Hilliard, who?
Yeah. And there's good parts of it because they make grids in such a way that, and they are really, it's like as soon as there's the whisper of a job availability, they're the first ones that know it, which might not be the case with a smaller place. But the smaller place is, it's really, It's more marathon than sprint. And mm-hmm. if you're lucky to bust out on a sprint and get a good gig and just keep going, well, then that agency is the place for you. But if you go, okay, there's going to be, as in life, times where, and who knows what would happen after Hit the Floor? Mm-hmm. Who knows what would whatever. Sure. And if Hit the Floor hadn't happened, I would still be with my agent. Like, it's not, mm-hmm. it didn't matter. Yeah. So I would just say, find somebody who, they may not be at the biggest agency in the world, but that just means that they understand you and they're going to work for you even harder.
Well, let me ask you. So for the three people out there who don't know Hit the Floor, let's just tell the kids how this happened for you. Let's tell them what it's about.
And how it got on VH1.
Yeah, yeah.
So Hit the Floor is essentially behind the scenes of professional basketball through and as a soap, it's through the eyes of the women, essentially. So the dance team. And so every week we have a big dance number and it's a soap. It's you know, all they're doing is basically sleeping with each other, trying to kill each other, or trying to kill each other while they're sleeping with each other. And mm-hmm. but how I would sell the show is, I think people may have a particular assumption about the show when you see the ads or when you hear the premise. You're mm-hmm. like, oh, it's like Jiggle TV, it's whatever, mm-hmm. whatever. But people who watch know, there's real scenes on there, there's mm-hmm. real character stuff, there's real actors.
I say it's Empire on a basketball court, but that's what
it's, I mean, it's, or Empire is Hit the Floor.
Well,
in the music industry.
You guys were first, right?
I mean, we were first, but we'll certainly share.
My correction.
We'll share the stage happily. I love the fact that that shows are just opening up. Yes. It's, as someone who grew up without gay people on TV, mm-hmm. without black people on TV, mm-hmm. the fact that you can now turn on, like, pretty much any night you can find something where someone is either gay or black or both,
yeah.
right. as in the case of Hit the That's Floor. True. I mean, it's like it just feels like it's about fucking time.
Did you – go ahead. Are you finished with that?
Oh, yeah. Well, so just how the show came about was, I had all my years of sort of, plugging along. One of the people that I work with over that time was a woman named Maggie Molina. Mm-hmm. And she worked various kind of – incarnations with MTV and VH1. Mm-hmm. At this point, she was she had a producing deal, and they said to her, we have this show called Basketball Wise, which is reality, mm-hmm. and it was doing well for mm-hmm. us, and we have Single Ladies, which was scripted, which is doing well for us. Like, maybe there's some kind of a mm-hmm. what could we do in this world? And and then Maggie called me up, and she was like, it's a show about a bunch of women. Of course, I thought of you, and I was like, I'm call La Rosa. Mm-hmm. And so I had actually pitched the show. Maybe 2 weeks later, I was like, okay, there's this Yelena character, there's this Asha character, and Derek, and whatever. Mm-hmm. And I pitched a show like a couple of weeks later on the phone, and I sold it over the phone. Which, which sounds crazy, and I almost, if that had been my only pitch
in life.
How long
was the pitch? Do you mind me asking?
How long was the pitch? I mean, it was 15 minutes, 20 minutes, wow. something like okay. that. I mean, it's as most
And it was
are.
Over the phone.
So you still did the full pitch thing.
Oh, I did the full pitch. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, because, yeah. I mean, you had to set the world up. And here's the characters, here's the mm-hmm. themes and all that stuff.
It was over the phone because you were...
It was over the phone because I was feeling fat that day. And I said, I'm not leaving the house. It was over the phone because all the people on the call were in different cities.
I see. I got it.
And so, like, Maggie was in, I want to say, Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I don't know where Jeff Old, who went on to... E to do the same job, but for all the different times that we're all writers, we know when you go into the mm-hmm. room and you're like, all those times you either get close or you have like the most amazing pitch with mm-hmm. all the puppets that go with it and all this other stuff, and it's like you just have a series of them where you could literally write 100 books about this fucking pitch and this other pitch and whatever. By the time I was the age I was and after my road, I was like, damn, motherfucking right, I sold the show over the phone, and it's not weird at all. I deserve it. I sold it through a fortune cookie, goddammit, okay. and it was fine. It was very much in the VH1 wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. They okay. wanted it. They have an audience that they know is loyal to them, and they're loyal to that audience. Mm-hmm. And the show is meant to be pop culture, sports, diverse. It's meant to be loud and have music involved, and it's meant to be juicy and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. VH1, we really were born of the spine of VH1. So the fact that they're supporting us so much now, I mean, there's billboards all over town, the buses everywhere. And everything. It's just like... Thanks, Daddy.
Yeah. Did you know that you wanted like Asha and Kimberly Elise's character to be black?
In my mind, they were. Yeah.
Was that in the script, or was that just – or were you leaving it open to the best person that came in?
I don't remember if that was in the script. In general, I like to leave it open to the best actor. However, I knew I wanted a diverse cast, and I knew that – I'm at VH1. I know what the – I it's – there was – I wanted it to be a mixed group of people. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. if we happen to have some really fabulous black Olivia, well, then maybe Sloan would be white. Okay. Who knows? But Kimberly Elise was the first person that I cast. Because, like I said, you might have a pre, you know, inclination of what you think the show is going to sure. be about. And I'm like, okay, but now I have Kimberly Elise, mm-hmm. who...
has some gravitas.
Has some yeah. gravitas. Has
some,
she's
some weight. Yeah, right. Performance, yeah. Ooh,
yes. She, you know, she's a, you know, she's a movie actor yeah. who mm-hmm. knows how to... And I was like, and so now everyone I cast... Everyone who every casting agent is going to send my way has to go toe to toe with Kimberly, has mm-hmm. to measure up. So, you know, certainly they'll still try
basically up your game.
Mm-hmm. Up your game. And yeah. if you have somebody who just was in, you know, a dance movie, mm-hmm. the third sequel of it,
I'm Step
you know,
Up 8.
Whatever it is.
The streets.
Right.
Whatever. Are back.
Right.
Electric Boogaloo 35. Look. Shabadoo Rocks.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, it's, and there could be a fine actor in any of those. Phony movies, but you just had to. Anytime I cast someone, I go, can they do a scene with Kimberly? And now I can say that about all the actors. Yes. I'm like, if I have a scene where it's somebody who has to act opposite Logan Browning, or they have to act opposite McKinley Freeman, or they mm-hmm. have to act opposite Jodie Lynn O'Keefe, I mm-hmm. go, measure up. I can't put someone in a storyline with Kat Bayless, who plays Kyle, who has mm-hmm. no comedy timing. Mm-hmm. She can't, mm-hmm. you know, create for you. So I need mm-hmm. to get people who I go, you know. So yes, there was a design in the amount of diversity. I like to keep my options open in terms of who those people are, but they all kind of generally show themselves. You know,
I mean,
like
your Alexis is the most beautiful black woman ever. She looks like Vanessa Williams at 20. you know what I mean?
I have a card in my office that I said this thing and they wrote it down because mm-hmm. I thought because I'm as liked as I am, they also think I'm ridiculous. but I said something like, if I can give the world the black Joan Collins, then my work will be done.
Right.
Or something
right.
like
because
that.
Because you watched Nighttime Soaps. Yes. And it brings it yes. all back
and you
full
did.
Circle.
Yeah.
Well,
and
for me, I was like, and as much as I can love and enjoy those shows, mm-hmm. I was not, you know, a British woman. I was not, right. you know, right.
wait a
straight.
Wait a minute.
I mean,
well,
maybe.
And Dynasty did, like, they brought Diane Carroll on yes. for, like, towards the latter sure. end of their run. But right. it's like, too little, too late.
Right. Mm-hmm. God bless, she had huge shoulder pads like everyone else. But, no, but for me, again, it's just doing a contemporary version. And that's fine that, like, it was... There was a quote by Harvey Fierstein mm-hmm. in The Celluloid Closet where people were saying, it's so wonderful that your work is so universal and that everyone can relate to it. And he's like, well, that's fine that you can relate to it, mm-hmm. you know, but it's gay. Like, mm-hmm. now you're in the position to have mm-hmm. to, like, apply it to your own life. Mm-hmm. So I love the fact that this is a show. You know, I was the only white kid in an all-black class for a couple of years growing up. Mm-hmm. There was no gay characters on television for mm-hmm. me besides, mm-hmm. like, Steven or, mm-hmm. you know, whoever else. Mm-hmm. Like, I like the fact that this is a show where the smartest, most powerful people are black or gay or whatever, and mm-hmm. everyone else is like, it's so great that we can, you know, it's this universal show. I'm like, yeah, but now they're the ones. Let them sleep around with each other mm-hmm. and right. have the money right. and have the power right. twist. Now you can enjoy
and
it.
And you don't hold back on the sex.
I can't.
You know what I mean?
For anyone.
Even though it's VH1. You know, you make it look like at least it's implied they are really about to get in.
There's
right now.
This season is quite.
You turned it up some more.
There's an episode that airs tomorrow night, which is there's the next couple are very intense.
And that's
I'm going to get
episode
letters.
Episode 3.
Episode 3 mm-hmm. airs. Episode 3 and
okay.
4.
It's probably going to be about 2 weeks for this coming
yeah,
out.
Yeah. Well, so looking back, you guys will know. I didn't lie. you know, it's in if. And that's kind of one of the benefits of having a cast that's very close because mm-hmm. A, they feel there's a comfort with each other mm-hmm. and B, there's a really, really healthy competition where okay. it's like everyone wants to be that hot sex scene because mm-hmm. they know that we're going to have that shit. Like mm-hmm. the lighting is going to be amazing. The set's going to be great. Mm-hmm. The vibe is going to be great. And they're like, I want that because everybody, that always blows Twitter up mm-hmm. and they're like, that's going to be mine. And so we always have like really, really hot scenes and everyone.
Okay, let's just get it right. Well, everybody's bodies is yeah. redonkulous. Everybody. Yeah. I'll be looking at the girls going, damn, I wish my body looked like
that. Where do you guys shoot the show?
We shoot at Paramount. And around LA, we're mm-hmm. we're an LA-based show, mm-hmm. and it was important to us to film here. So we use a lot of real places.
They're supposed to be the Devils. They're supposed yeah. to be like the Lakers, right?
So it'd be hard to really pull this one off in mm-hmm. Vancouver. Yeah. But right. Yeah, and I like I remember the episode where we had our first sex scene between Jude and Zero. Mm-hmm. It was in the same episode where we had this crazy sex scene between Yelena and Terrence, and they had to be the same. Like they had to be. It wasn't going to be one of those like Melrose Place kisses where Matt kind of moves in for the kiss, and then you go as they embrace, you cut away. I was like, no, I want the belt unbuckled. Yes. I want the shirt coming this way, that way.
The lip bit, everything.
And they do it, and they and because it's real, and they're all trying to make
so
it real.
So you, as the showrunner, do you how do you convey that to your directors? Like, this is what I want in the scene. I want a belt unbuckled. I want the shirt thrown this way. Like, do you literally have that conversation?
That's all during
with your
the tone
directors?
Meetings. And
I
all
think
stuff like
you
that.
Know there isn't one director that comes on Hit the Floor that doesn't know what they're getting themselves in for. And I think the directors are also a bit competitive. Like, I think. You know, they're not coming on to a show on another network that might not lean into the sexuality as much as we do. And so now, you know, our directors are really quite fantastic. They're going to take the challenge and they're going to want to make it as sexy as possible. And I say sexy as opposed to sexual because there's plenty of opportunity where you can objectify an actor in a situation like that. There's plenty of opportunity where you can just throw two characters together and have it be real raunchy. But what we do is we never how do I put this? No one is really objectified in this particular situation. Like, if you watch the show closely, and now I can say this because we can talk in blue
language.
As
he takes his shirt, off
now
and
we can do this. Hold on. It's getting really warm in here. You'll see scenes where, I'll say figuratively, the guy will be going down on the woman, not the other way around. Like, you never see Yelena lower out of frame while she, you know, does whatever to whatever. It's kind of like...
they'll be on top of them or something.
But it's kind of like there's... We're not... Particularly with our female characters, they're not there for your titillation and amusement and enjoyment. Right. You know? It's an equal opportunity show. But I think because we're not gross... frankly, for lack of a better word. And, you know, and also these relationships are built up. It's not like you have two people that just go, we're so attracted to each other and now we're going to have sex and it's going to be super crazy in 20 minutes of all this like camera grazing everywhere. Like there's always something to it that makes you get into it. And then there's always a scene afterwards where, I mean, we have a show with like really crazy sex. And we also have a show with, you know, Yelena having this big beatdown with her mother about like all that. Like, and we like
cat
to do
fights, big dance moves.
Yeah. it's crazy. So, you know, if we were just, you know, going there, I think that's one thing. But I mean, really, I have no attention. So I have to make sure things are really grabby.
Since we're talking about Hit the Floor, I want to talk about two important elements of the show that I love. Number one is that you have mostly female directors. Am I correct?
Yep. First season, we had nothing but female directors.
As another female director, and she's a beast of a director.
Oh,
right.
Thank you.
The other thing is the dancing. Here's one thing I love about your show. Now, I'm a former dancer. One of the things I love about your show...
Which you'll demonstrate, I'm sure, at some point.
Yes.
I've been on tour with a lot of people. One of the things I love about your show, because I'm one of those dudes... You guys all know being filmmakers. You get spotted a mile away. That ain't even her doing the spins. That ain't her. You know what I mean?
It's all close, and
then it pulls back, and you know what I mean? I'm like, that ain't that bitch. Oh, no, your show that I've seen?
You can't tell.
Those are them bitches dancing.
You know what I mean?
I love that.
And that made the audition process really time-consuming. Yeah. Every single person who plays basketball or dances on the show does their own. And actually, that almost... The only time we ever had a double was for a couple of hours because Kat had hurt her neck at some point, and so we didn't use her for like wide shots or something, which actually I don't even know how many of those scenes we actually shot. And then we were prepared to and we had an actual double on standby for Valerie Ortiz, who Raquel is back on the Devil Girls this season, and she didn't even need it. She didn't need her. We had her like nearby, dressed the same and everything. And I'm sure the girl was like, put me in, coach. But we're like, no, Valerie's good. Yeah. So anytime you see, you know, and it really allows us to shoot the hell out of those dances. Right. Like when you see Taylor Page flip, land, sideways, whatever. We don't have to do like some weird camera trickery to be like, and now she what's like,
and then she comes up.
Right. Like, like Golden Girls where they had like Betty White doing his old crazy dancing and then you cut down and she just like, ta-da, at the very end. And you could tell it was like a 29-year-old woman the whole time.
So you have one choreographer, multiple?
We have one main choreographer and his name is Michael Rooney, and then we have Danny Valle, who is his assistant choreographer. And they are are.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
Oh, they be dancing too.
Yeah, it's funny when I get, I definitely have people like, I'd love to choreograph for your show. And I'm like, first of all, one's enough because Michael's amazing. And also, you know, the dancers are like a secondary cast on the show. You know, we have our main cast of 13, 13 series regulars. I don't know how cast. I manage that. But and then we have 11 dancers. Normally, you know, we have 14 dancers, but 11 of, three of those are the main cast. So, and they're
always
own.
In the background in the shots, we just like the basketball guys too.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I always use them. I always give the, each dancer a line every season, just so that they like kind of feel like part of it.
They get
booked. Well. Yeah. And so, because it's a lot of hard work, they're in it. It's the vibe of. The family vibe in that group. And Michael is so creative. I mean, he did like the Bjork, It's So Quiet. He did Praise You, that video. He's very well known and very well respected. And the fact that he tells stories with the dance and the fact that he brings that. And, you know, and we're, the dancers were very, you know, we've had a couple of tough hits on the show personally.
Did you lost one of the dancers, right?
We did. Yeah, we did. And that's when I saw everyone really come together. And so you just, the girls are, they so trust each other and they so love working with each other. And they have this like weird psychic language when like Michael will be like, okay, now Tiffany, I need a little bit of, do you know what I'm saying? And then she goes, okay, got it. And then she'll do, whatever that is, like a six count and then
whip your hair,
and whatever.
Whip that hair.
But it's was like so intricate. I was like, how did you get like from like to somehow that. Now you know to turn, pivot, flip and do this. I was like, that was just a for you? Okay. So it's like one big brain that thinks and it works
for us. And when you write the scripts, are you writing, I mean, you obviously don't write the dance number. You just say insert dance number here, or how does your choreographer know?
I would love it if I put that in a script. Insert dance number here. Bye, bitches. Let me know how that goes.
Yeah. Okay. Are you writing more to it to sort of lay things out?
Because yours move story.
It's actually it's not far from insert dance number here, but it's not quite that. Basically, we make sure, and in season three, it's very very tightly kind of sewn together. That the dance has something really, really specific to do with the storyline. So when we write it, we'll have, you know, we'll have the dance in the script, what have you. But if there might be like looks between certain characters that we put in the script, there might be a moment where they're kind of in weird competition or where someone's like hawking the other and the other one doesn't know it. Like, so those sort of things will write into the script and into the, and Michael will know to put that in the choreography. Like we had a dance, in season two, that was My Radar was the song, and it was basically Asha, like she was scheming behind the scenes, and she was just giving nothing but side eye shade, everything to Yelena in this dance, and so that was definitely in the script, and it. But Michael was able to take it, and all these things were like Taylor is giving Logan so much funk, it was awesome. So yeah, it's. I mean, I would never go. And then she pirouettes and goes upside down. But that's how I approach the show in general. I feel like everyone who is a department head, everyone who brings their own thing, you kind of have to go, here's the vibe, here's what I want. But I don't do your job, and I don't pretend to. So that's bring good. Me what you can do. And if you have someone like Michael Rooney, you know that person. I mean, he's just insane.
Right.
He's a
beast. Let me ask you in regard to that we're talking about the dancing and the direction and whatnot. How far in it? So. How many days do you guys shoot, first of all, an episode?
We block shoot, so we do two episodes in 13 days, which is rough.
Wow. Yeah. That is ridiculous.
Wow.
You'd
never know it on screen. I'm pouring water. I don't know if the microphone's hearing that.
Well, let's explain block shoot for maybe someone while he's getting his water ready for people that might not know that. I mean, basically, you're taking two episodes and you're shooting them at the same time. And you might shoot a scene that's in episode two or episode two on Monday. And also that after lunch, you're shooting a scene that's from episode
in the same location.
Yeah.
And it helps to.
It's a big puzzle.
Yeah.
Like your line producer
our
ADs has to be on it.
Yes. Exactly. Our Maria Melagrane, our line producer, and our ADs are for sure like these like military tacticians. You know, we know we're on VH1. Our budget is definitely comparable, but it's we have. You know, we know what other show has like.
But you guys look like
dancers.
You have a big budget, though. Well, that's what's important,
and that's why. I mean, I think cross-boarding, block shooting. That's it helps that for a couple of reasons. One, you get more bang for your buck on screen, and also everything is written in advance, and it keeps the. It, for me, it keeps the story tighter. Okay. Like we don't have any fat that you then like. because you're basically going, okay, I know that come episode 10, this scene in episode 3 is pointless. Why do we even need this scene? Mm-hmm. It doesn't set anything up. It doesn't pay anything off. It's fun, but wah, off it goes. So mm-hmm. that's, I think, helps a show keep up its pace, which is pretty intense.
So, so you guys block 2 a week, right?
Okay. Two in 13 days.
Two in 13 days. I'm sorry. 13 days. Now, so how long do the dancers have to learn the routine? Could you guys do at least one or two numbers? How many numbers do you
we
guys do?
We do one an episode. Okay. One big one. And then
one
we might
big one. And you have like rehearsals.
Things
and
like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. little snatches of that in mm-hmm. the episode. But they have, it's, you know, they're their own sort of mini schedule throughout the season. So Michael has his time to choreograph it. Then he has a skeleton crew of about 4 dancers who mm-hmm. kind of do the kind of
the big stunts. And
how do you say? Well, or just kind of who he's able to sort of see what the whole dance will look like okay. with just 4 people, and he'll imagine mm-hmm. where those other people mm-hmm. are. But it's good for him to see these, you know, 4 people. Then he'll bring in the other dancers, and then finally he brings in our leads. So our leads okay. actually have the least amount of time with the dance and are kind of called on more to pick up those steps faster, which is why it's good that we don't have doubles, because right. why those girls are doing right. their own right. stuff, because mm-hmm. you know, it's
there's no
time.
Mm-hmm. It would add to your day also to okay, take out the actress, put in the double. Yeah. I mean, that if you're doing block shooting, it also, that just makes your day so much longer.
Yes, yeah. And it also is a drag when you have a good shot and you're like, who's that blonde girl? Because that's not Kyle. I can't use that shot. And some shows would, but I'm a bitch in the editing room. Yeah. In the editing room, I'm like, I saw a half wisp of hair that's not that same color blonde. Lose that shot. My editors love me.
And talking about dancing, your cast, I remember when at the event the other night, they were talking about how when they know that it's time for the dance, everybody comes to – if they're not on that day, they show up at the set to watch.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm. I love that.
It's wow. – well, there's something very, very unique and specific that happens on dance days. They will do the dance multiple times. The music, in order for them to really feel it, we blast the shit out of that music. Mm. So if you're in the arena, it's boom, boom. It's massive. Mm-hmm. And they really are superstars that day. Mm. They are – they are athletes. They are so crazy fierce. They're done up, you know, mm-hmm. snatched mm-hmm. for the gods with the hair and the. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're just. It's like watching 14 Amazons go 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 go, and it's really in the between their attitudes and the choreography. It's just everybody really just feels like they. Is that you or me?
It's you.
James. Sorry, this is my drug dealer. Oops. No. Oh gosh, was that being recorded? But everyone shows up because the feeling on set is so. Like, there's just an energy. Mm-hmm. There's just, and yeah. when you're watching, and that was so true from the very first day when we filmed that Who Run the World number mm-hmm. in the pilot, mm-hmm. it was just like, it was attracting people. People mm-hmm. were coming mm-hmm. over. People who, and you know, when you work on a show and you're jaded and you're going, oh, my lunch is over, I'm going to go, whatever, people just stayed. And yeah. now it's like, and because the dancers are such an integral part of the show, kind of behind the scenes, it's mm-hmm. just a support thing
definitely.
As well.
Well, I distinctly remember the pilot because I was like, oh, VH1's doing a show, oh, there's basketball, oh, there's dancing. But then I saw, oh, wait, Dean Cain is mm-hmm. in this show.
Oh, let's get
so
to it. Let's get to
I
it.
I am watching the program.
I picked the wrong time to pour water.
Did we have a crush on Dean Cain?
Oh, yeah. Ever since Lois and Clark, the new Avengers of Superman, I love Dean Cain. And I feel like he's someone who should work more. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, he said he had a stint where he wasn't getting jobs. And it's like, oh, he's on Hit the Floor. I'm in. I'm watching. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was when he – I remember when he came in to come and meet and talk about Pete. And I had only seen him clean shaven. Mm-hmm. And that's mm-hmm. generally how he works. But mm-hmm. he came in that day for whatever reason. He had like his scruff mm-hmm. going on. And I was like, that's Pete right there. Like it's just like he's kind of like yeah. that, you know, fried by life mm-hmm. kind of guy. Dean is very charismatic. I only learned after I cast him that my childhood friend since I was 4, she wasn't like the typical girl. She had like, her room was like, I don't know. She doesn't have like that sort of pop culture stuff anywhere. Mm-hmm. She's like, don't you remember I had a poster of Dean Cain in my room? Mm-hmm. It was the only thing I had. So she was very excited when she got that happy birthday
yeah.
from cute. Dean Cain.
I snuck on the Warner Bros. lot.
So let's tell the story.
When he was shooting Lois and Clark, I went and bought a Warner Brothers sweatshirt, like just that just said WB.
She wasn't even living here at the time.
I was in town, like visiting or whatever, just like seeing Hollywood and being so amazed, like, oh, maybe one day. And I just kind of sweet talked the security guard, like I was a PA or something.
Really?
And he's like, oh, well, you got the sweatshirt on, so go ahead in. And so I just snuck onto the lot. And he was out there shooting. And
really?
I,
yeah. You got to watch?
I got to watch. And then afterwards, I went up to him and asked for a photo. And he
really?
Posed. Yeah, he was super nice.
And he punched
nice.
You.
Yeah, he was super nice.
And she went
yeah.
flying.
Right.
Because he was Superman. I mean, he was in the costume and everything. So.
Really? Wait, you went up to him while he was in the costume?
Mm-hmm. I wasn't the only one, though.
That's like some cosplay fantasy for some people.
I wasn't the only one, though. There were a couple little groupies hanging mm-hmm. around just sort of like, oh. You know.
So there's the lesson there. If you go to a lot and you put on the sweatshirt,
right.
you'll get in anywhere.
Yeah.
Good. All right. So yeah. let's that's
now, this
a how.
Was circa 19,
well, this was
1996.
This is before we were yeah. bombed and everyone right. was like, show
you
me your ID and a vial of blood.
This,
right.
Yeah, I was so amazed at this little security guard at the WB gate who was just like, oh, no, you're wearing the sweatshirt.
It's like here at the lot, oh, we got here. All this security stuff we have to do to even get you guys on. It's ridiculous.
Right. I had to like okay. fight my way through fences Did and dogs.
Well, like, you don't know who I am.
Yeah. How dare you?
Dean brings that out in people, I will mm-hmm. say that.
He's sweet. He's totally sweet.
He's a very he's a very fun guy. He's a fun guy to have around. And I think and I say about him and I say about Kimberly Elise.
And I like their relationship.
I like you know? Like seeing them together. I was mm-hmm. like, "Whoa, okay.
There's,
let's go."
I think I was very fortunate to, because Kimberly Elise is someone that, and Dean Cain are mm-hmm. people that say yes to you. You don't say yes mm-hmm. to them. So I was fortunate that when they came to the show, they brought what they bring, which is this like level of professionalism. They're cool. They're not like, I need this at this time, and mm-hmm. blah, 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 blah. Like, because I have a bunch of younger people on the show mm-hmm. who I'm
first,
like, they
some
could.
First time, too.
Some first timers. Mm-hmm. And I was like, thank God I have these people at the top.
As examples. That,
right. Because yeah. people pay attention. Because mm-hmm. we, you know, there's easily someone around who you could be like, oh, this is what she does and she gets it. And people mm-hmm. say, okay. But no, on this show, the people at the top who are the ones that you look at. And look after are the ones who are, you know, kind of
they set their
coolest. Yeah, yeah,
yes.
yeah.
Yes.
So, because I can't be around all the time, you know, in the makeup trailer. But when they're there, you know, no one's going right. to be acting up with Miss mm-hmm. right. Kimberly Elise nearby. No one's going to be like, right. I didn't get my tea wasn't warm to the right temperature.
Oh, yeah. Don't show your butt like that.
Right.
Don't show
Kimberly
your butt.
Be like, girl, sit down. She didn't even have to.
Yeah, just
she's
look.
Just got a
just
presence.
Give her that look, yeah.
She has
that
a presence.
Black mama look.
Yeah. Like, come on.
I love Kim. Yeah. So... You know.
No, that was good. I like seeing those two together.
The last thing I want to talk about is, so now you're directing.
Now I'm directing, yes. I started directing at the end of season two, mm-hmm. and I direct in season three
How
as
did
well.
You make that transition? I know you're on the set all the time, so you get to watch it and see it mm-hmm. and learn and grow. You're basically shadowing them all the time anyway.
Yeah, it's it's a weird little film school mm-hmm. in, a weird, mm-hmm. in a way. You're like,
yeah.
You know, I would love to say that I'm one of those people that was like directing when I came out of the womb. I thought, I can't wait to direct. Yeah, right. That was, God bless you, because
I'm
that wasn't
be the
me.
Next Spielberg.
Right. That wasn't me. That wasn't me. I always wanted the safety and kind of like the hidden behind the laptop screen. Mm-hmm. And I was very, you know, inward as a kid. Like I okay. have my little, you know, worlds in my mind. I was never, you know, in order to be a director, you have to be such an alpha. You have to be right in front of everything. Right.
Mm-hmm. Decisions on the quick.
Exactly. Yeah. And you have to really know your shit. And so for that reason, I was like, you know, there's other people perhaps who blah, blah, blah. We were probably two or three episodes in and the first person... And it was Kimberly Elise. Mm. She was like, when are you going to direct? And I was like, what? What are you talking about? And she was like, are you kidding? You'd be a perfect director. And I was like, you know, I'm thinking she's so nice. Thank you. Right. Yeah. And then.
She's an actress trying to keep a job.
Right. Right. Exactly. And then.
Because she don't work. Right.
And then more people started to say to me, like, you know, you need to direct. You'd
yes.
be. Because when I'm on set, I'm very keyed into, as I have to be, the characters and what they're saying, what they're doing. And there's some vibe of what I do that apparently lends itself to that in some way. But the people who started to say it to me more were the people who would be financially responsible mm-hmm. for it if I fucked up. So it would be like the AD who, you know, yeah. would say it or the DP. If mm-hmm. a DP says you should direct,
really?
You're like, okay, you don't think I'm going to.
Yeah. That's legitimate.
Right.
Because they can help you. They can guide you.
They can help
it.
You and they can also, and you can also hurt them. So it's like, and
they
you know,
wouldn't say that to you if they didn't mean it.
Right.
Because
mm-hmm. so
if they thought you were bad, that ruins their life.
Yes.
Totally. You know?
And so basically what wound up happening was we had to pick up a few scenes after season one was wrapped. And it was just going to be a few hours of work on a, on a day where we had to grab some stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I wound up, I was like, okay, well, that's kind of like a, if I fuck up, like it's a day, like whatever. And I wound up doing it and I wound up having so much fun and everyone wound up really enjoying it. And so when the second season rolled around, I had already, you know, a lot about the show has sort of lent itself to learning for me that has, I think is unusual and I'm very grateful for it. I think the fact that everything was written in advance and, you know, filmed kind of a little bit after that and then post after that, it allowed me as a first-time showrunner to get into understanding everything without the everything avalanche coming at me all at once. And the fact that it's on a VH1 and I have a, like a million network people who are freaking out on me. Like it all just kind of happened in such a way that having never come through a room, now I'm showrunning and having never directed, I'm kind of in a, you know, I had a day to kind of, you know what I mean? To kind of practice. And so in season two, I basically, you know, said I would like to direct the last two episodes. The network was like, great. And I said, okay, well, shit.
That went easier than I thought. I was ready to like, I mean, battle.
But they always say that you should wait a little bit in season two, season three before you say
season three might have been a little soon, but for whatever, I don't want to say for whatever reason, because I do think that I bring something to the table, but VH1 has never not been 100% supportive of me, and there was
they let him showrun his fucking show.
Well, exactly, and there's plenty of opportunity for them to go, I don't know about this, or I don't know about that, and so they knew that there were people around who could support me if I needed the help or whatever, and the actors were super into it, and the crew was super into it, and those were the days that went the easiest. We finished the soonest because I was able to go in there and go, I need you to, you know, and I have this weird language because we're all friendly now, because I have this very strange language with each of the actors, so I can go, I need you to just kind of with a little, you know what I mean, like something.
I wonder who you learned that from.
right, exactly. And so then I had and by the time I was like, then it would be like two takes and we'd be done, and so we'd be in the in, you know, hair and makeup would be pissed at me. They're like, we got wrapped early
all day getting these girls ready.
Well, be, no, but they were mad because they were like, I didn't even get any overtime this block. I'm so mad.
But your line producer loves you.
Oh no, there was high-fiving. And so anyway, so once, and then, and actually the first episode that I directed, not the first, but the first block that I directed in season two, we had, it was the day, it was the final two episodes of the season, we had over 100 setups. I don't know why. I was like, if I'm going to do it, jump right in. But it was because it was a lot of basketball and a lot of dancing.
Oh, that'll get you.
And it was like the whole final game of the season. And then the dancers is this whole thing. And then it was also in that block, we also had the arrest of Oscar Kincaid, where every single character is in this tunnel. So it was all this crazy shit. Anyway, and so I did it again in season three. And just to add on to the heap of stuff that I had to do, I also for some reason opted to act in the finale. So
not just a little role, the guest star role.
Well, it was, no, it was, trust me, it was a little role. I don't want anyone showing up thinking they're gonna get like Sophie having to make her choice. That wasn't my role. But it was fun to do. But those credits are going to be a nightmare. It's like written by, directed by, created, produced.
Starring.
And yeah, I know. I did put my name in front of Kimberly's. That's, can you imagine? Starring James LaRosa. Also starring Dean Cain. But no, so it's.
With.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the one they love.
Like, well, I think Dean actually is with.
He is with. He is with.
And so his choice. And so I love it. Just say with for him.
It's more powerful than and. So it's a good one.
the wording. But and it was something that I just continue to say, and the same thing as show running, and the same thing as running a room, the same thing of whatever.
Well, let's talk about running a room really quick.
Yeah, well, I would just finish this. It just happened to be something that I was able to do.
Okay.
I was going to ask how big your room is. Oh my!
It's basically as big as the room we're in now. I have this in season three is a luxury in that I had 1, 2, 3, 4 people besides myself. Wow. In my first season, it was 4 people with myself. Mm-hmm. It's tight. I mean, it's anywhere between 10 and 12 episodes. Mm-hmm. But I'm very, very involved.
How many weeks are you guys in?
Oh God. A bunch of months. I don't know. You're saying how much?
Yeah. Like how many months are you guys in the room? Or?
Like, I forget. Okay. I'm so bad with that. But
they're all different. Just curious.
No, it's, I mean, we have a very tight schedule across the board in the writer's room and on production and in post. I mean, a lot of, like you say, making, you know, decisions on the quick. I mean, it's like, you better make damn sure you get that scene before the end of the day, and you better make sure that script has been published by whatever. So, but that's why I have to be really on top of, you know, everything. But fortunately, I love the show, so it's not not difficult
it's
for
not
me to
a chore
phone it in.
For you.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got to be in the room today.
Right. No, I'm like, how can I be in three places at once? And then I try and figure it out. And the crew actually will do the best they can to see if there's a way for me to be like, if you have this production meeting while you're auditioning this actress, while at the same time you're choosing the song.
That's show running. That's
real.
The job.
That's real.
Yes. So, but you were going to say something.
Oh, I was just asking, like, how do you run your room? Like, how do you staff? You know,
I read original material. I do original 1 hours. I am a bitch about not reading anyone's short stories or their sitcoms or their like.
I don't think that's being a bitch. I don't.
I just like saying
that.
I'm a bitch, though.
Okay,
I'm a monster. You only have so much time, so you want to read the stuff you want to read.
Well, yeah, and I think that for me, a poem doesn't tell me how you can handle Lionel being a total monster in this moment or whatever. So, but I like reading original stuff. I like reading when it's really super twisted and weird and what have you. I don't need you to send me your dance script because I'm going, what are you telling me? You're just telling me that because there's dance in it, I'm going to hire you. Mm-hmm. It's not like the characters go around saying pirouette all day,
right?
And so I meet with people, and in the same way that it's casting, I just go, do I like them? Do I want to spend time with them? Like what's that feeling about? Do they get the show? Mm-hmm. And it's funny when I hate to keep going back to the same point, but because I did not come through a writing room, I'm not jaded by the politics of, the clicking of people and you answer that person and this person. When I meet with people, I go, I don't like seeing people bullied. I don't like seeing whatever. So if this person has an idea, like you listen to them, I listen to them. I don't shut them down. I listen to hear, whatever. And neither do you, whatever. So it's a small room and everyone, it's really laughy and jokey. I had somebody when I interviewed them for a job, they cried because I explained to them how it worked, and they had.
Well, you are a bitch.
Thank you. Thanks for saying that. I appreciate that. No, but they had just come off a show where the show was run by two showrunners who run opposite sides of the country and were at war with each other, and they were having to satisfy both of them, and they were like their life was
torn
essentially
apart.
Ruined. Yeah,
torn apart.
So when I was saying things like, when someone speaks, other people listen. This woman like broke into tears, and she's like, "No, I'm embarrassed. Don't look at me." And I was like, "It's like, what the fuck is out there in the world? That's crazy.
There's some tyrants. It's out there, and it's real.
I'm scared. I hit the floor forever. Know. I hope this. I'm gonna have like Asha and Yelena dancing with Walker.
10 seasons in a movie.
Oh
yeah.
Damn. But yeah.
Okay. Well, cool. Well, thank you so much, James. This was a great episode.
That's it.
What else you want to tell us? What have we not
asked?
What's
on your mind?
What's on my mind? I got nothing on my mind. You guys are absolutely a delight and a pleasure.
Thank you.
I'm so glad she broke her ankle, just like you said.
Oh. Feel better, Lisa.
She faking it. Ain't nothing wrong with it. She out there surfing now in the rain.
Team Cap, Lisa.
Exactly.
But it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
We had a very good time.
We did.
Congrats on the show.
Yeah. It's awesome.
I think it's awesome. I really do. Let me go just first, okay? For a quick sec.
Okay, here we go.
I love the fact that you are a white male. Let's just say it for the three people who don't know you're white.
Okay, fine.
That you wrote this show with like a Kimberly Elise on the in the lead role,
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Because I turned on to see Dean Cain, and then I was like, oh, she's on this show? I was wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the pretty little curly hair. I see
Oh, yeah.
I remember VH1 was big hair bands and, doing that adult contemporary videos type thing. Mm-hmm. And to see them just sort of segue, find a niche for themselves. Yes. Like, we're doing other dramatic content that features people of color and or of all backgrounds. Amazing.
I like that our show can say that. It bums me out that's the case. I have to be honest. I have conversations about the diversity factor and gay and lesbian factor and female. It makes me feel good that I'm not fucking up, but it's a bummer that it's a conversation that you'd have to be, Cassie Lemons to do a show with Kimberly Elise. Mm-hmm. And if you're not, then, or Shonda with, Kerry Washington. Mm-hmm. And if you're not, then like you have, and I will say that I do really feel like for shows that are not embracing that kind of,
tell them.
I have cracks at certain actors that I feel shocked that I even have the opportunity to cast. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, like Lynn Whitfield comes on the show and she kills it. I'm like, God bless you, but I should have no access to Lynn Whitfield. Like, she should be having her own show somewhere.
She should be on the nighttime Falcon Crest.
She should be on, you know, or killing some movie and whatever. And the fact that she came in and we talked about her part and whatever, I'm like, I feel very fortunate. But that's across the board. I feel really fortunate that the fact that I have Kimberly on my show, I don't go, you know, it's so wonderful that I'm doing this thing and that I'm doing some favor. I mean, Kimberly, I should not have access to Kimberly Elise because she's so amazing. Mm-hmm. No one should have access to her because she should have like seven things lined up and you're just like hoping the eighth thing could maybe be yours. So on the one hand, I benefit from it. On the other hand, I just, it does kind of bum me out that, that it's.
I guess where I was going with that was just trying to acknowledge the fact.
I also can't take a compliment. Just FYI.
It's okay. But you live in today. Yeah. You know, like you said, you went to a school where, you know, you were pretty much the only white kid there. So you remember that. You know, you live in L.A. where you see people like myself and Linnell every day. So you remember that when you write. You're like, these are the people that I see.
You know what it's like to be an other because you've had that experience. And I feel like there are a lot of white males running around in this town who can't grasp what it's like to be the other in the room.
They don't go past La Brea.
No.
You know what I mean? They don't go east.
I do wonder I do wonder. I think, you could say certainly it's a white man's town. But I also feel like having not worked for a while in this big mega way, you know, I would scrape through whatever.
Sure.
I think that the idea of trying to placate a town and sell something and what's going to sell, I think makes people take all the edge and all the interest off what they're doing.
Sure.
So you may have white male writers who want to, you know, have a show, you know, with Alfre Woodard and it's this amazing, whatever. Mm-hmm. But they may go, let me censor myself because, you know, obviously it's going to, you know, it's Megan Fox or nobody. And, you know,
instead of Megan Good.
It's like kind of systemic and kind of a little gross. But I'm hopeful that I do love what Shonda does, Shonda Rhimes. I think it's great that, and I love the fact, and I remember her doing an interview when she was doing Grey's Anatomy. See how I make you guys not leave me? I'm totally dragging this one. But when she was doing an interview about Grey's Anatomy, and she's like, it's not a show about race. Like, we don't sit there and go, you know, Korean doctor while talking to whatever, or you don't understand my struggles as a black woman. Like, that doesn't happen on the show. Yeah. It's kind of like these two women are friends. Mm-hmm. This is a surgeon who like fucked up the surgery.
And someone's dying.
Right.
Fix it.
Yeah. Right. And it is like you said, it's reality and it's weird.
In your show, I don't feel like you really bring it up ever either.
It is what it is. It exists.
And that's not to say that you can't have something about that, but that's just not what the show happens to be about. Mm-hmm. So anyway, hopefully with shows like Empire and How to Get Away with Murder and other shows that continue to come on, will continue making the world look like that you can watch television and go, I see me. There I am.
Yeah.
All right. Well, on that note, that's a good place to end it.
It is.
Thanks so much, James. We appreciate it. James LaRosa, you guys. You rocked it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And thank you for the Starburst I'm about to eat.
So can people follow you on Twitter or Instagram or anything like that?
Yep. They can do @JamesLaRosa. That's Twitter and Instagram. Mm-hmm. And they can watch Hit the Floor on Wednesdays.
Do you guys all tweet?
10 p.m.
during the show?
We're messy. Yeah, we all tweet everybody. We retweet everybody. We tweet at each other.
That's
you get
good.
All behind-the-scenes stuff. And now I've learned – you know, we were on at a different time, and now I've learned that because we air at 10 p.m. And they have another one that airs in the East Coast at 1 a.m., I can live tweet both coasts at the same time. It's this weird thing. So now I have like this sort of we're all night
He's
long.
He's a Twitter head now. Look at it.
We're all night long. The whole cast. Yeah, we've got to support our baby.
All right. Thank you. Lisa, Linnell, where you at?
I'm not Lisa.
I know you're about to call me Lisa. It's just a habit.
We're engaged.
2 years we've been doing it, that's all.
In a bitter feud. Okay. I'm on Twitter @LinnellWhite. So that's LynnelleWhite.
That's what's
that. That's it. Hit me up. Oh, and I'm still doing my write every day, workout every day. I've been my New Year's resolution. Mm-hmm. We're still going strong, so it's happening.
I love it. She got this new thing she's doing. She's just trying to kill it right now.
Yeah.
But take care of yourself.
Well, the writing.
Good luck with that.
Sometimes you miss the writing every day thing. You know, like, but I have the New Year's resolution, write every day.
I love it.
And work out every day.
Yeah. That's what you're supposed to do.
Well, the workout every day is because I'm going to the Oscars. So
that's
I'm trying
right.
to be svelte.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It just got real frosty on this side of the table.
James is like, I might go.
Don't fall on the treadmill.
They asked me to go, but I don't know.
he pulled the same thing I pulled on Lisa. Feel better soon. Don't fall on the treadmill. See how it is.
And I am your host, Hilliard Guest. And you guys can find me on Twitter. I say Twitter like I'm cool like that. On Twitter, at Hilliard Guest. You guys can follow the show, Screenwriters RR, on Twitter. Also, if you have any questions for us, screenwritersrentroom@gmail.com. A big, big shout out to some of the countries. You know, we're all over the world right now. 80 countries. 82 countries, as a matter of fact. Yeah, it's crazy. So let me just shout out.
Oprah syndication.
Okay, look, where my money, bitch? and so quick, just shout out to some of you big countries that are like following us, like London, like a bunch of countries.
The
UK, yeah. Y'all motherfuckers. We appreciate it. The numbers are just growing like crazy over there. Australia, France, South Africa, Italy, Brazil, which is another big one, and Canada. Big shout out to all you guys. You guys rock. We love that. So please do us a favor. Go on iTunes. Give us a 5-star review because we need that for the metrics. We're trying to get into that top 10 this time. At least top something. Top 150, top 900, shit, something.
Then someone should have taken off their shirt because sex sells.
You know what I'm saying?
Then you need Linnell. You need a camera. No, no, no. Oh, no, no.
Go ahead and flash them, girl.
It's not happening.
Oh, she did
James
it. Look,
he'll do
it. Look, she did it. Thanks, Linnell.
We have that rumor out there that I was topless on the podcast. Oh, my goodness.
That'd be a good name.
Excuse me while I whip it out. So y'all know what y'all are going to do on the Rant Room. So join in with us at 2016 instead of 100.
Yes. Thank you.
So you guys know how we do it on the Rant Room. On the show, we keep it real, we keep it opinionated, and we keep it what? Join in with me. 2016. Peace, y'all.
I'ma say what I feel. And I promise to keep it real. Welcome to the Rant Room. Boom, 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 boom. Oh, yeah. So you wanna be a writer? Well, you gotta be a writer till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind, and the business got me stressed in the Rant Room. We let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the craft of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. Welcome to the Rant Room.